Josephine Pierce, Reel 3.
What uniform did you wear?
Well, we wore the capes were grey, lined with a warm navy blue lining, and they had navy blue collars. And our peaked caps were grey, with, if I remember rightly, the peak was navy blue. And they were lined with the warm lining of the cloak, so that in the winter, we could be warm. Well, I just wore a stripy dress with a navy blue belt and apron and a cap. The photos show you how I was dressed that you've got.
Yes, you weren't associated with any particular hospital.
At that time, no. I was doing private. You see, I had done the nannying, and then on and off, I had done some private nursing. So I had my own uniform, which I didn't wear as a nanny. I wore white overall. But when we went to France, most of us, I think, were in stripes. Some were in navy blue. They were already sisters on wards, I presume. Very few. I don't think more than two or three wore navy blue. The rest of us wore stripe, which was the uniform dress at the time, and the navy blue belt. And I think part of the time I even wore my stiff white starched belt. We wore anything that we had, because we had no money to go out, and besides, we had nowhere to go to go out and buy it, where we were stuck up in a village up near the Maginot Line, which was chiefly full of pigs.
You were, of course, over 21 by then, but did your parents have any opinion?
When war broke out, I was 26.
On whether you ought to go overseas?
My parents had nothing to do with me, and had had nothing to do with me for years. Daddy was thrilled. Had I been put in custody with my father, it would have been very, very much different. Daddy was thrilled, because, as I said in the book, he himself went overseas and did something secret at the beginning of the war, though he was 70. And I shall never know what it was. The secret was kept far too well. And I went over with him, and that secret will be kept as well as how I went over with him. But that's going back. That's going ahead of what we're talking about. You want to know about the uniform.
What about shoes?
Goodness gracious me, I think what we had, probably black lace-up shoes, I can't remember. More than likely. And black stockings, which was the sort of standard thing in those days. I cannot remember. I believe once we got out there, we did wear ordinary stockings sometimes. I really can't tell you.
The only thing about having an all-voluntary unit is that only certain kinds of people can participate, and people from some economic backgrounds just wouldn't be able to participate in a voluntary unit.
Oh, yes. I myself, for instance, was poor. I lived as best I could, by what I earned, because my family had struck me off for becoming a Roman Catholic anyway. And we had a very nice Polish nurse, and though she had no money behind her. Nurses didn't have money anyway, especially in what they earned in those days. So I don't think any of us were, from the money side of it, at all well off. But one didn't think in those terms. We were, a type that was lucky enough to have been chosen to do this, and certain types of people wouldn't want to do it, like that sister who was offered it. She didn't want to do it. We were the type that wanted to do just that. Perhaps, I know I've always had a spirit of adventure.
How rigorous was Mrs. Spears in her selection of members of the unit?
Oh, I think she was very careful. She was very particular. After all, She was choosing people that she had to put on trust. People who would be responsible for the running of her unit. And seeing that it was being run as it should be run. Who were capable and willing to take responsibility, to deal with horrors, to sleep in a ditch if it was necessary, which it often was. We had to be that type of person, and there's no doubt about it. Mary, she was Mary Borden, the authoress, you know. There's no doubt about it that she was a very good judge of character. Then she had her MTC girls. She knew most of them personally. Of course, they were from a rich background. There was a difference there. But we nurses weren't.
Did you have any training before you went over to France?
Oh, no.
I know you were all trained nurses, but you hadn't been preparing for wartime when you'd trained as a nurse.
No, but you're a nurse. You're a nurse anywhere. You're a nurse at an accident in the street. You're a nurse at an accident in the air. You're a nurse. So that you just fall in with whatever situation arises. Because you're fundamentally, you've got to be able to deal with any emergency. So you don't need any extra training for that. And we formed ourselves as things went on, because no two things were the same. When we had influx of wounded, we'd never met such a thing before. Nor had the nurses back in England when they had the influx of blitzed cases. I mean, to suddenly have that thrust upon them. Remember, hospitals in those days didn't have the amount of car accidents to cope with that they have nowadays. So that an influx of blitzed patients was something entirely new. But you just get on with it. You get on with things as they happen. You don't need the extra training for that.
Now, I've seen the telegram that you got in March 1940 that said, come to France and bring 3 passport photographs. And
so oh, on. Yes, they were taken in the middle of a blitz. I've often laughed about those photographs. There was a terrible blitz going on, and I was in some photographers in Charing Cross Road. There was the most frightful blitz going on, and everybody said, well, it doesn't look like it on your face.
How long did it take you to join the Hadfield Spears unit that was already out in France?
Well, I was out within the month after they'd been there. So it couldn't have taken me long, you see. I was sent to Lily White's and measured up for a cloak and a hat, and that was done in no time. Got my things together and took what I was told to take and didn't take any more.
Once you'd had your passport photographs and your telegram, how did you get to the Maginot Line?
I went by train. I had all my tickets, of course, and everything, and I went by train to Paris, was met in Paris, spent a night in the hotel where Mrs. Spears was, and was due to be taken up to the Maginot Line the next day by an MTC driver. Cannot remember which one it was. I don't know whether it was Barbara Graham or Cynthia Toulmin. I just don't remember who it was that took me up. I think Mrs. Spears... Oh, yes, Mrs. Spears was with us, quite definitely. That's right. And I do remember feeling that Paris didn't feel... I'm very sensitive to atmosphere. And the atmosphere in Paris was not the Paris I knew. There was something. I remember going to visit a friend, great friend of mine, in the top floor flat in the Avenue Bosquet. And fear of repeating myself because it's in the manuscript. But I remember her saying to me in French, they talk of peace, my dear. What peace? We've been sold. Nous sommes vendus. And It didn't register too much at the time, but when I eventually got up to Sargamin, where the unit was, and, of course, inundated with questions from the nurses, I remember them asking me, was Paris behaving itself? And at first I thought, what do they mean? But, of course, I realized what they meant. Because we had been at war for 3 months, and they were behaving as though there was no war. They were doing nothing, nothing to protect the people, nothing to protect themselves. And that was what Madame meant. We're sold, nous sommes vendus. What peace? She knew, she could foresee, she'd lived through the First World War, and she could foresee that. Nobody could foresee what a terrible war it was going to be, of course, but she could foresee that there were going to be changes and that possibly the Germans might even come to Paris.
How was Paris different from London then?
Well, London had the atmosphere of war when we came away. London changed. We started off with blackout. And I remember coming out of Holborn Station and couldn't see a thing, because blackout was blackout. They were trying it out, really. It was at the beginning of the war. And touching a gentleman, I could just see him in the gloom, you know, and asking him where the bus to wherever it was I was going went from, and he said, oh, I'll take you there. Well, in those days, we weren't used to black people much in England, and when we got to the bus, there was a dim light in the bus. I saw that it was a black man who had very courteously taken me to the bus. And I remember sitting on the bus and thinking, good gracious, he was black. You know, that was the attitude in those days.
Did they not have blackout in Paris in 1940?
Don't remember seeing any. But I don't remember much, you see. I remember I arrived, I was put through my paces, told my instructions for the journey, told more or less how I was going to be behaving when I got the other end, what sort of conditions I was living under, just time to go and visit Madame Canna and her husband and daughter, and we were gone all the way up to Sargamin. Gradually we saw guns hidden in trees, and I remember suddenly it hit me. I thought it had hit me before that we were at war, but suddenly it hit me. We're really at war. These are guns in the trees. Where are the Germans? What's going to happen? You know, and stopped every 5 minutes to show our military passes, our Geneva Convention cards, and all this. We were very much women in a military zone, which was unexpected, excepting that they knew there was this small unit of femmes anglaises, infirmières anglaises, somewhere up near the Maginot Line. Of course, you realise it wasn't a line. You've heard all this before. It was just a series of forts at different intervals. It was on the Dutch side, the marshes and bogs, which were supposed to keep the enemy out, which was exactly where they came through. And Sargamin was just an Alsatian village where your wedding dowry was the height of the manure heap outside your house, and very much a village of pigs which were kept in the back of the house.
I'd like to hear about the medical and surgical facilities you had.
Very good. I think Mrs. Spears had bought most things via America, because it was equipment such as I don't think our army had. For instance, outside the back door of what we'd turned into the theatre was a steriliser. Mobile steriliser. We had a mobile X-ray, which if we went off in convoy, these things were on wheels and trailing at the back of whatever vehicle it was. We also had our own mobile autoclave. We had our own mobile mattress steriliser, which as you went along, so many mattresses were put into this thing, and it sterilised as you went along, because we never reopened without having completely sterilised bedding.
What is a mattress steriliser like?
I'm trying to remember what it was like. It was just a long sort of vehicle into which I don't know whether it was two or three mattresses were put. And I suppose they were autoclaved. I can't remember. I don't remember ever looking. That was seen to by the men, and we had nothing much to do with that side of it. But the theatre equipment, you see, Nancy Wright, the Australian sister, was the theatre sister, had all her sterilising equipment outside the door of the room that was turned into the theatre. So we had everything that we could have for that time in history.
How many of you were there in the unit?
I'd need the photograph to count.
Well, approximately, I mean.
Well, of course, I suppose we were a couple of hundred altogether, including all our French medical students who were acting as orderlies. And I cannot remember whether we were 10 or 8 sisters and the equivalent MTC and Mrs. Spears. Lady Hatfield came to visit us once or twice.
She was actually living in France, wasn't she?
Yes, she lived in the south of France and remained right through the war. She got stuck down there.
Where did you set up your operations?
They used... you see, this was a convent that was taken over. A very large convent. Several hundred nuns and novices were evacuated, and there were still a couple of hundred left. It was a very, very big place. And it had been used by the Germans in the First World War, and the beds we were using were those put there by them. And they had, between the wars, used it for their boarders. It was a school. So that in two wars, French and German wounded had occupied the beds, and between the wars, school children had occupied them. Now once more, French were in them. Eventually, we presume, the Germans used them.
How many beds did you have?
We had two long rooms, which we called wards of beds. The numbers escape me.
Would it be...
If you look at the photos, you will be able to count. I cannot without the photos, but they were quite large wards. They made quite large wards. They were empty most of the time, because if you realise, there was very little fighting on that sector. We didn't realise what was happening on Dunkirk's side. In fact, we were ashamed of being British, because we could see no British soldiers, airmen. You know, we thought that we'd abandoned France. We felt as the French did. Where are they? They're not helping. We had no idea about Dunkirk, of course.
Did you have adequate medical supplies?
Oh, yes. We had all our drums, which we sterilised in the autoclave. We had all our gauze, which we cut up. You see, in those days, nurses in hospital made their own dressings. Nowadays, everything is done for you, sterilised for you even. But we cut up the gauze and folded that in the proper way and made our dressings and filled our drums. And then they were sterilised in this mobile steriliser. But the theatre was hardly used at all there.
What sort of patients did you get?
Well, we had one big influx of wounded. We had amputations. We had very severe cases, as well as very mild cases. But we had leg amputations and arm amputations, hand amputations. We certainly had some very seriously wounded officers as well. how they played the pranks they played, I cannot imagine with the wounds they had, but they were quite unbelievable. I've written about them. But the day that we had a lot of wounded in was hectic because we had made a reception room, of course, where stretchers, you know, were lined up on the floor and stretchers could be brought in. And we spent the day doing the emergency dressings and sorting them out before they were taken up to the wards and generally cleaning them up and getting their dirty uniforms off them, washing them, cleaning them, dressing them. Doing all their dressings, I mean, by that. And then they were taken up to the ward in clean pyjamas, all provided by us. And all the sheets, we provided sheets. It was front line, but Mrs. Spears had a wonderful psychological side to her. She realized that to put people in proper beds, not just lay them on stretchers in old army blankets, was part of the cure, which it literally was, to find themselves in these proper beds with proper pillows, proper blankets, bedspreads on the beds, you know, was immediately a cure in itself.
How did your patients come to you?
By ambulance, by train, by hay cart, various ways. I cannot remember exactly how they came because mostly one was in the room doing the dressings.
Since it was rather quiet as a fighting area, did you give any medical care to the local civilians?
No. Well, I mean, if anybody had wanted us, I cannot remember. Maybe there was someone who had something wrong with them and one cared for them. But I should think the nuns would have done that because they were the nuns of the village, you see. And half of them were German and half of them were French. So the German ones were in the background while we were there. And one or two of the French ones came and helped us, who were nurses. And then one presumes that when the Germans came, the German nuns were to the fore and the French nuns were invisible. It was an enormous place.
Would you say that most of the time then that the convent wasn't full of patients?
Oh yes, we had both wards full after that one influx of wounded. Then some were taken down to somewhere further down into France. But the very badly wounded ones remained up there and we handed them over to the French nurses when we had to leave. We were kept very busy with that lot. But not hectically busy. But they were very serious cases. And so cheerful.
Well, you mentioned the practical jokes in your manuscript.
Yes, and Petit Père in my big ward who'd had his leg amputated was so cheerful. And yet, you know, it must have been very hard to know that he'd never have a second leg again. There weren't the modern facilities that there are now. Remember, we had no penicillin. We had nothing like that. We used Septaplex powder, as it was called, with great effect. We filled the wounds with these. We had some very, very good... French surgeons are very good, you know. Excellent, the nursing side that lets them down. And they did the major operation straight away and filled the wounds with dressings and Septaplex. And then, if possible, we put them in plaster to keep them free of germs. That was learnt during the Spanish War, that method of cutting away all flesh that had come in contact with whatever it was that had wounded and making it into a sterile operation, then packing it with Septaplex and dressings and putting plaster on and leaving it alone for 2 or 3 months. And
that was effective?
Very effective indeed.
I've spoken to a lot of women about First World War nursing, and the main impression one gets is of constant drainage through tubes.
We did use that method as well. We used tubes a tremendous amount for open wounds, constantly. You see, the badness, the pus or the bad serum had to be drained away. So we changed the dressings and we changed the tubes pretty frequently on some very bad stomach operations, especially.
Why did you have such particularly bad cases? Does that indicate that the other ones were taken elsewhere?
I don't think so. We had a regiment, chiefly, called Les Diables Rouges, the Red Devils. They were given that name in the First World War by the Germans, because they were a brilliant French regiment. Their job was to go into no man's land and to distract the enemy's attention from the main forces. Consequently, when they were wounded, they were wounded, because the whole concentration of fire was on them. And that was why we had some very bad cases indeed. Oh, we had plenty of minor ones as well, but we had very bad cases. And they were... the very bad ones were not removed as quickly as the others, partly because our French medical team, who'd never come up against English nursing, I'm calling it English, though we had Australians and Americans and English and a Polish girl, but all English trained or American trained or Australian trained, they had never come up against such good nursing. So that they kept these bad cases as long as they could to keep them in under our care. And the men didn't want to leave us either. They noticed the difference. Even with the French nuns who nursed them, they noticed the difference in the nursing. I mean, they were nuns, they did their best. They did according to their training.
How far were you from the field dressing station?
Well, I suppose we were a field dressing station. Let's put it that way. What came to us was straight away wounded. You see, that was our aim and object, to be front line always. And we cut away all the clothes and generally cleaned them up and sorted them out before we knew what had to go to theatre and what had to go to the ward and so on and so forth.
Did you have medical cases as well?
Yes, I think we had one or two cases of pneumonia, but resulting from their wounds, because they were all wounded. And the French method of cupping was used, and yours truly was the only one, of course, who was trained in that. So the French surgeons used cupping a lot, and not used at all now. It may be in France, I don't know. So I was in demand for doing the cupping.
Do you think that was effective?
I think it was in lots of cases, quite useless in some. They would do the whole of the back, chest, and I'm going by what Brigadier General Spears told me when much later on in Beirut he got pneumonia and cupping was prescribed. And I was sent for to do the general. And he said it relieved him tremendously. So that cupping was an old way of nursing, which is not was not used in England at all at that time. Already it had been discarded in England, I think. Maybe occasionally it was used. But on the continent, it was, and I believe is still still is used.